Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Saw Something Scary back on the main channel. Jeff and Derek with you. Jeff, right? Getting to see your beautiful face this Monday morning, man. What's going on? How are you?
I'm just trying to brighten up everybody's Monday. You with my face, everybody else with my voice.
Your body.
Oh. No, sorry. Podcast medium is probably the best one for visual presentation of my physical aspect. You know, the real sad thing here is that this won't release on a Monday. And so, it's not going to brighten anything. But I'm doing well. We had our first snow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You guys did have your first snow.
So first snow day out of school for the year. My kids were over the moon.
Yeah, that's great. I miss snow days.
That's what I tell my kids. Like, I've turned into my dad, but I'm like, well, I stopped liking snow days when I stopped getting out of school for them. But it's true. They just make my day more miserable.
Yeah. I'd give anything right now for for a snow day.
A snow day for you would be somebody reporting there's cocaine in the dressing room at the Stampede and the cops have to come and shut it down.
That's true. I guess snow days are every Saturday.
Gotta get a bump to keep going, guys.
We've got 5 shows today, you guys. Anybody got that snow? That sweet, sweet snow.
I'm falling asleep right now.
I'm building a snowman with us. You know what is funny is we do have, obviously it's manufactured snow, but we do have snow at the end of the show at the Stampede right now. And
I mean, I think it's all manufactured, right? It's the poppy plant. This is not really my area of expertise.
Kitchen workers run out there at the end of the show. They're like, what's this white stuff? Can we snort it? not to ruin the Dolly magic for anybody, but it's like soap that looks like snow.
Should we call Wahlberg in for this?
This is just me ruining the, you know, the Disney magic. So it's soap that looks like snow. And the best part of the show for me is like I'm sitting on Nico in the middle of this thing. Santa Claus is circling around me on a sleigh. And the riders are going and there's snow falling. And so it's just this perfect opportunity to watch all the stuff going on, but also to see like everybody in the crowd because everyone loves Santa Claus.
Sure.
And so kids are going nuts. Everyone's having a good time. You see these big smiles on people's faces, which is obviously the reason why, you know, we do what we do. But sometimes, man, when the crowds aren't the best, and I see these little snot-nosed kids stick their tongue out to taste this snow, and then just the horror that hits their face afterwards makes my Grinch heart shrink 3 sizes just because I'm like, it's what you get, turd.
That's the Ralphie situation from A Christmas Story just distributed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We figured out how to, like, franchise that thing.
Yeah, but it's awesome. That's good stuff.
It's nice to get like the positive Christmas nostalgia bump there or also the negative one. And you can just have both in the same moment.
It really is my favorite part of the show because, when they're pumped about it and stuff, man, it's really cool to see. But then like when a crowd's been sitting on their hands and then they see snow and they're like, next time, come here with more spirit, you jackhole.
And that's what we call Appalachian karma here at the Stampede.
It's going to get you. So what were we talking about? Cocaine?
I think so. I think that's what snow references.
About snow days.
Yeah.
Man, it's been a minute since we've been on the main feed. Of course, on Patreon, we did 2 bonus episodes last month. And sorry that neither one of them were movies worth talking about, but I think we've totally redeemed ourselves today with the movie that we got going on. So we're going to be talking about whether you should stream it or save it when it comes to Freaky if you haven't seen it already. So before we do that though, man, what's our friendly neighborhood horror reporter got for us
this week's horror?
Well, just a couple things. One is actually 2 of these are quick hitters. But then I got one that I think will probably inspire a little bit longer discussion. Just under the heading of good news for those who are fans, did you see that the Hellraiser writer has regained the franchise rights after the lawsuit around that franchise resolved in some kind of bargain outside of court, some kind of settlement?
I think I saw something about Hellraiser, but I don't know if we've talked about this before. I'm not the biggest Hellraiser fan. So when stuff like that comes across my radar, I'm just like, oh, okay, cool, whatever. And then I just kind of go on about my business. So what's up with it?
Well, it's, I guess it's going to open the door for more of these to be made. You know, Friday the 13th fans are like, please, can we get a version of that? But I raised it just because I think probably some of our listeners are Hellraiser fans like you. Not a fan. And I mean, I say not a fan. I've never watched one of the movies.
Yeah, I don't think I have either.
It's just never appealed to me as a concept. And so out of everything I have seen in my life, Pinhead is not one of them. So anyway, congratulations to Hellraiser fans out there. And if you're listening and you're a super huge Pinhead fan, I don't know, hit us up in the Facebook group. We have watched Crow's Nest recently, so going to a literal hill with the Cenobites may be something we're interested in doing.
It actually might be a good vacation. So
for sure, man. I really think I'd rather hang out with people from Hellraiser than those not the people in the RV in Crow's Nest, but the people who made Crow's Nest. I think the Cenobites would be a better pack of hang buddies.
Yeah, for sure. Ugh. Crow's Nest. That is a movie.
It is a movie that was made.
Yeah. If I could ever, I was thinking like what would be the proper analogy for this, but like if I could eternal sunshine and spotless mind, anything in my life, you know, where I could just rip something out without remembering it, it would be that I watch Crow's Nest.
I mean, I've got no argument. That really is an awful, awful movie. I can't remember being terrible. So angry at a film in a long time. So if you love us venting, you need to sign up for that Patreon.
Yeah.
You'll get a heavy dose of it.
Yeah. You're just real lucky I didn't say the F word a lot, because that was my original review. It was just me going to say the F word 87 times and then throw my headset down in anger.
Well, the count I had from the episode was like 46. So I still count that as a lot, sir.
Whoa, we're halfway there.
Yeah. Again, patreon.com/scarypodcast.
So cool, man. So some Hellraiser fans have some stuff to be excited about. That's good.
Yeah. And that's just my attempt to serve that contingent within our own fan base. And yeah. That ain't me, but I hope y'all enjoy the party.
Amen.
Were you the one who posted in the Facebook group that Peter Dinklage is going to be the Toxic Avenger now?
Yes, that is something that I posted.
Yeah, again, I watched a bunch of those Toxic Avenger things on like late night USA when I was when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you any details about it other than like he's a janitor who got toxified or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always up for Peter Dinklage having more stuff to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I came into contact with the Toxic Avenger character through the early 90s cartoon that I think was on the USA Network. And so watching the movie was a huge culture shock.
I'm assuming it's pretty coarse.
Yeah. I mean, it's your like run of the mill horror B movie.
Gotcha.
You know, but I was just like, I want to watch Toxic Avenger, Mom. I want to watch Toxic Avenger. So we rented it and oh boy, that was a bad choice.
I would say Teresa was not happy.
That's a bad choice for 7-year-old Derek. But I've always wanted to see it done this generation, you know, just with the amazing things that we can do now with CGI and everything. So I'm all on board with Peter Dinklage being Doxy. I think he'll do a great job with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's well said. And I have the same expectations. Will I see it? Well, like Hellraiser, I'm not entirely sure. But if you're a fan of that franchise, seems like a good idea.
Yeah, I think just for nostalgia's sake, I would watch it, or I will watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Just to kind of bring me back to those childhood memories of Sunday morning cartoons watching Toxic Avenger.
And Mom freaking out and throwing furniture around the house because you rented it?
Well, I mean, we it would come on Sunday mornings, so I would tape the Sunday morning wrestling show that would come on because we were in church. But the Toxic Avenger cartoon would come on before it. So I would tape that and I would tape the wrestling show. And so we would watch that. But yeah, yeah, the movie was a completely different story. I think we got like 30 minutes into it and Teresa was like, nope, shut that off right now.
Yeah. I mean, she probably wasn't wrong.
No, she wasn't. One of the best parenting decisions she ever made. Matter of fact, but yeah, it'll be cool to see what they have in store for it. I have no huge expectations for it, so I think if I come out of it being like, "Oh, that was fun," then that'll be good enough for me.
Yeah, that's probably what they're shooting for. And yeah, considering the dearth of movies that we have enjoyed right now, it may end up making the review list.
Yeah, for sure, man. Anything besides Crow's Nest.
So maybe on a more positive note, although I know there's a segment of people for whom this will not be positive, you saw the news this weekend that WB is sending every movie they're releasing in 2021 to HBO Max alongside theater releases.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's, we've already talked about Wonder Woman 84 going that direction, but we're talking about really anticipated movies, not just Mortal Kombat and Malignant, but Conjuring 3, which I'm sure our listeners will be interested in. And then my whole household is ready for Godzilla versus Kong. And so there are huge ramifications for the movie theater industry. And I mean, I'm delighted because a lot of these movies I would prefer to watch at home. Now, I probably would still go see Godzilla versus Kong in a movie theater.
Yeah.
I might not, though, go see Conjuring 3. I might prefer that in a dark living room, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really great in my mind for the consumer, but I do wonder, I mean, how are theaters going to react to this? What do you think their play is?
Man, I honestly don't know. I feel like that this is the first step in movie theaters going the way of Blockbuster.
Sure. The hope I have is that this transitions movie theaters either into basically more like the dollar movie theater experience, right? So like if you want it, the price comes way down. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't see it in the first couple of weeks of release or whatever. So if you want the popcorn and the good speaker system, that's your play.
Yeah.
And then everybody else that survives shifts to an Alamo Drafthouse model where like we're providing a premium evenings entertainment along with lots of dining and comforts, right?
Yeah.
And if we could get away from basically what theaters have become and either shift them into a high class Alamo version and then sort of a scaled down, cheaper dollar theater version, I would be very happy with that. I just know that that's going to be really tough for the industry and a lot of people who make their job and make their money managing theaters and whatnot. So I do feel bad for those guys.
Yeah. I think that there needs to be an evolution of the movie theater experience, obviously.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about it before where like Alamo Drafthouse is the pinnacle right now of that. I don't know what I mean. I like both your ideas. You know, if AMC, which I think you and I, no offense to the good, fine people that work for any AMC theater.
They are not the problem.
They are not the problem. But you and I would say if we're going to like rank them, Alamo Drafthouse is the pinnacle. And I would say that AMC is probably right now at the bottom of the barrel.
For sure.
And you've got Regal hovering somewhere in between the two. So, yeah, if AMC theaters want to drop their prices to, you know, instead of $20 to go see a movie, you know, for you and your girlfriend or you and your significant other, you know, it's $2 and then popcorn's like $4. I mean, dude, that's especially right now with just the way that the world is and the way that the economy is and all that other jargon that you and I don't like to talk about on this podcast. But right now it seems to be prevalent because of, you know, of this business model. I just think that the business model needs an overhaul. I would much rather see them all go the way of the Alamo Drafthouse just because I love that movie experience. I think you're the same way. Like I love being in a crowded movie theater watching a movie that everybody's been waiting on for months. You know, as a matter of fact, I was thinking, I don't have time today, but I was looking through my Facebook memories this morning and the first trailer for Endgame dropped 2 years ago today.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And, and I was like, man, I need to sit down and watch Infinity War and Endgame again, just to have that experience. But I want those, man. You know, I'm very glad that HBO Max is putting out Wonder Woman on Christmas because it gives me something to do on Christmas Day because I'm just going to be stuck here because I won't have time to go home. But I would much rather go to like a movie theater, you know, and watch that movie with a bunch of geeks And I mean that with the most heartwarming intentions, you know, by saying that word. But I would much rather go see that with a bunch of people than be stuck in my apartment watching it by myself. But they're definitely the business model needs to change for movie theaters. And I think that this is either going to cripple them or they're going to adapt and we're going to see better stuff come out of it. That was a very rambled, long-winded response. Obviously, I'm more passionate about this than I thought I was.
Well, I didn't think it was too long-winded. I mean, I think there's no way that the industry doesn't experience quite a bit of downsizing. We're already seeing that at like the executive level. They're cutting people loose in the offices and whatnot. You know, there could no longer be a theater in Cookeville, Tennessee. And
that'd be a bummer.
Yeah, it would be a bummer. But if it is, the opportunity to sort of, like you said, renew and take a fresh look at the industry is probably worth that. I say that as someone who's not financially dependent upon the theater. I'm sad and worried for guys who are like, look, I'm a theater manager. That's what I've done my whole life. That's what my expertise is. I'm hoping those guys can sort of cherry pick whatever comes next. And if we have more premium theaters, they bump to the head of the list. Maybe for some of those guys, it'll be a chance to step into something they've been wanting to do but couldn't. That said, on the whole, it's a net gain to me. And I'm looking forward to 2021's movie theater releases. Movie releases from WB. I hate that it creates some uncertainty for other people, but for the consumer, that's a win.
Yeah, no, 100%. And now you look to see, like, what's the next – who's the next person that's going to cave, right? Like, will Disney go, oh, okay, well, if Warner Brothers is going to do this, then we need to do this too. Or will Universal do that through, like, Peacock? Or, you know, so it's interesting, man. 2021, obviously, we all hope that at the stroke of midnight on December 31st, 2020, that something magical happens in the air and things tend to come back to a little bit of normalcy. But I'm very interested to see what the movie industry in itself is going to do. And curious to see how movie theaters survive through this thing, man, because I think. Obviously, being in the business that I'm in, I want to see live entertainment come back, and I want to see I want entertainment to thrive. But I also think that we have allowed that industry to coast for so long, and with the rise of streaming, we need to figure something out. And it's the same thing with Broadway too, man. Like. Hamilton said it wants to come back July 4th. That's its shoot date to want to come back to doing live shows again. And I mean, hopefully we can make that happen. But if not, what's going to happen with that industry too? There are a lot of ticket sales already for Hugh Jackman and Sutton Foster's Music Man. That's supposed to open up. It was supposed to open up this fall. Obviously, it's not going to. But I just wonder if there's going to come a time where not only can you go buy a ticket to go see that in New York, but you can also have a streaming network where you can pay a premium price every month and watch a Broadway show that a lot of people in the world aren't going to be able to see, you know? And I also think that's another thing too, man, is like, we need to, man, sorry, I'm on a soapbox today, Jeff, I apologize. But I really do feel like that this is a good reason for the entertainment industry in itself to go, okay, we have marketed all of this stuff for people to want to see it, but yet we have priced it at a point where a lot of people can't see it. So instead of like all this Pirate Bay and all this stuff going on, what if we scale it back? And yeah, I know we're going to take a hit. I know that sucks. And, you know, I won't be able to buy the Bentley this year. I'll have to settle for an effing BMW. But like, let's scale it back. And maybe if we scale it back enough, then more people will come see it.
Sure.
And then everything will wash out. I'm very curious to see how everything's going to play out in this upcoming year with just entertainment in general.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think what you're talking about right there is exactly what MoviePass back in the day was calling for. They were saying the theater system needs to be reevaluated, and we're going to be a mechanism for that.
And you know what? Even though they failed, they did help because Alamo Drafthouse started their regular pass. AMC started their StubHub stuff. Mm-hmm. Like they saw that the model would work, but these theaters are like, oh, no, well, screw that. We're going to adapt it to our own system. You know, MoviePass crawled so that all these other things could run. And I think that you can still do stuff like that.
Yep. And I mean, in some ways, Netflix has shown that too, right? I mean, the things you're seeing with HBO Max, Netflix was like, no, we can just go over the top and deliver stuff to people. And then all the studios who'd been feeding them content thinking, well, we're happy to have another outlet. They're like, no, wait a minute, dadgummit, we should be capitalizing on this. That thing you said about Disney being the next to fall, I feel like that rock is teetering at the top of the hill and like the wind is blowing and it's starting to move. I read an article 2 weeks ago that said Disney sees Disney Plus as the future of their entertainment division.
Yeah.
And so I think that ball is going to roll downhill. Mulan is going to come out in theaters and on Disney Plus. I think that's, you know, mm-hmm. the next version of that. That's inevitable.
Yeah. Maybe it's not the smartest thing to do, but like the competitive side of me, if I'm an executive at Disney, I go, well, then we put Black Widow out on Christmas Eve. If you're going to show Wonder Woman on Christmas, then we're going to put it out on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Vince McMahon move, right?
Yeah. But I mean, dude, like, what isn't that what you do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're already seeing the trend starting to go in this direction, then why don't you not only jump on it, but you jump ahead of it?
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that you raised there that is kind of adjacent to a horror movie podcast, but it's pertinent to your industry. I don't know if you've ever watched VidAngel, which is very niche. It's a movie service that started off basically taking out objectionable content for families. So you would stream and it would take out bad words or whatever you set it to.
I had a friend of mine that worked for him for a while. Matter of fact. Yeah.
Well, so they have done this thing now where Disney sued them. They were like, fine, we'll pay the bill. And then they went into content creation. And what they've done is this thing called Dry Bar Comedy. Have you watched any of this?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of my friends are on it.
Yeah. So I think it's a really great model for encouraging comedians and getting the content that like your viewer base wants. So like they basically put a bounty out, and if you can deliver your set and get laughs without, you know, a cuss word or without whatever, they get paid more. And so the comedians are like, sweet, we've got an outlet here. We'll meet that criteria. We'll get paid. We'll have a good time in front of an audience. I mean, are we that far away from seeing a, you know, Netflix, part of Netflix's brand is we have these great comedy specials. When do we get the comedy only streaming channel that somebody starts and it's like, look, you like stand up? We've got it right here. Or man, honestly, the Broadway streaming channel, because Hamilton showed us with the Disney Plus deal that they could use an empty theater, pay these guys, pay the orchestra, bank a huge, you know, payment off of it. And send it out to the world. And so if you can do some kind of distributed income deal for that, we're like, hey, yeah, we'll go shoot Beetlejuice. Same style. We'll put it on the streaming channel. Everybody involved gets residuals. I mean, that's better than not working, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously not everyone is going to pay $75 million for Broadway shows. Like Hamilton is the exception, not the rule. But still, man. I mean, right now, all of those Broadway actors are out of jobs.
Right.
And have been since March.
Yeah.
Since March, man.
Yeah.
Like, we've got to do something for them.
For sure.
And it's just insanely frustrating to me that we haven't already.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, just, you know, I've been fortunate enough to have the opportunity to see several Broadway shows over the last 5 years that I've wanted to see. But again, not everybody has that opportunity. Not everybody can fly themselves to New York and go see Broadway shows, or go to Chicago and see Broadway shows, or heck, even go to TPAC and see Broadway shows. Like, it's just, I just think that there's got to be a way that we can get this art out to people where blue collar Joe Blow factory worker who has a secret Broadway fetish can watch My Fair Lady or whatever the crap.
No, I'm with you. And honestly, again, not every show is Hamilton. But so right before the world shut down, you know, Hamilton was set to come to Kentucky and Atlanta, which was around the time of the release. And so once we saw it on Disney Plus, we started looking at Louisville and I think Atlanta to see like, how are their tickets available? And dude, they had been sold out forever. And what I think that is true is that, like, for my family, we're pretty close to that blue collar scenario you just laid out. Like, we like it, but it's hard to take a family as large of our as ours to a live performance. So what I think would happen is people would see this stuff on their living room TV and they'd be like, dude, I'm going to catch that when it comes to town. Right. And like, what we were going to do is, like, we picked our kid who like liked it the most and we're like, we'll take you to see it too. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it could drive ticket sales if they want to then take the company either back to Broadway or they want to put them on tour. So yeah. I think there's a lot of future for the Broadway set in a streaming model kind of playing off Hamilton.
Well, and it feels like everything goes back to wrestling with this podcast, but it's the truth. Like, that's what the old wrestling model was, right? Like, you would watch Saturday morning wrestling and you would see these matches with, you know, these bigger name guys against these like enhancement talents, you know, these tomato cans. And then inserts would be, hey, let me tell you something, brother. I'm coming to Poughkeepsie, New York this weekend, brother. Get your tickets. And they're like, oh, snap. We live in Poughkeepsie. We need to go see this thing.
Yep.
Or, you know, Shawn Michaels, I'm coming for you. McMinnville, Tennessee, brother. And you're like, I live close to McMinnville. I should be able to get tickets for it. And I think that would be perfect, man. You know, come see Miss Saigon. You know, coming to the, you know, the Sheboygan Community Center or whatever. Just there's got to be a different way than what we're doing.
Sure.
That's, and like, thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
We live near Crossville, which has a very small regional theater that's wildly successful. I hope it survives.
I want to run that one day, by the way.
That'd be awesome.
I really do.
And what they'll do is, like, they'll bring in the Les Mis, like, C team, you know what I mean? And the understudies and whatnot. Dude, let's do that. You know, Nashville gets the A team or the B team. Small regional theaters get the C team, the D team. If you loved it on your big screen, you're going to like it even more in living color. I mean, it just seems like it's right there waiting to be done. It's just going to take an industry willing to say, okay, we got to follow where the audience is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got to follow the trend.
Yep.
And it feels like that everyone's too stuck in their antiquated ways to be like, hey, here's something new that's coming along. Maybe we should try this.
Maybe we can jump on. And I mean, again, with Netflix, you just see, like, somebody's going to, and somebody's going to stack some really fat cash doing it. You know.
Now, I will say this. There is, like, Broadway.com or something. They do streaming shows, but it's like, and no offense to this, but it's Sweeney Todd with Angela Lansbury from, like, the 60s.
Sure.
And while that's great, people want to see Beetlejuice. They want to see Hamilton. They want to see they'll want to see The Music Man when Hugh Jackman's in it. They want to see what To Kill a Mockingbird when Jeff Daniels was in it. You know, these are the things that they want to see. Hadestown was the big one last year in 2019. Like, those are things that people want to see. And I think that if we could give them the right streaming platform to be able to do that. And now I'm not saying I'm sure it's going to have to be more than $9.99 a month, right? Or it's an a la carte where you sign up for it and you go, okay, you can watch this, but you're going to have to pay $35 to watch it.
Or you get like a set of credits. Like, you got 5 credits with it, like Audible.
Yeah.
You can pick 5 shows and that's just it. If you need to watch more, you buy another credit.
Yeah. Something like that. But I really do feel like, man, that, And I don't want live performance to go away by any stretch of the imagination. I think that live performing, and not just because I'm in that profession, but like, I feel like live performing is an art form that never needs to go away, because there's just something magical about connecting with an audience and people being able to see it up close and personal, right? But at the same time, if we're not allowed to do that right now, because we still haven't got this disease under control, that we have to figure out a way to get this out to people. People need this kind of release. Like, say what you want about wrestling, say what you want about the WWE, but I'm glad that they're still putting their product out every week, because people need that escape.
And people need to work.
And people need to work, exactly. Say what you will about the NFL, say what you will about the NBA or MLB. I'm glad that these people are having the opportunity to, you know, to be able to do their sport and to play it, because I mean, there's a guy I work with who is constantly watching football because, like, that is his escape from the stress that we have at our job. So what were we talking about? Snow?
We're talking about
snow day.
WB driving a stake through AMC's heart.
Yeah, man. I really, truly, genuinely, I mean, obviously, I should not listen to Gary V before we do these podcasts, because this is how my brain works now. But yeah, man, I look forward to seeing what's going to happen with the streaming platform in this process. And I hope that other art forms and live entertainment can figure out a way to hop on board with this so that it can go out to more people.
Yeah, which I think actually will prolong in-person performances because you'll have a new fan base who's able to sample and taste and then buy. So
yeah, dude, just one more thing on that. I am a part of several like Beetlejuice fan groups, and one of them was like, hey, did you know the whole Beetlejuice show is on Pornhub? And against my better judgment, I went and looked, and it is. Somebody filmed Beetlejuice, and they knew that if they put it up in, you may want to cut this out of the show because I don't want it to get taken down off Pornhub. But they knew that they couldn't put it anywhere else because it would get taken down. So they put it on Pornhub. They put it under this weird title, and you can watch the entire show. I mean, pretty much the entire 3-hour Beetlejuice on Pornhub. We shouldn't have to do that. Like, I shouldn't have to go to a porn site to go see my favorite Broadway show.
For real. And there's somebody who will pay some amount of money to do that. There's a happy medium of people who will say, I'll give you X amount of dollars that would make it worth the industry and the rights holders releasing it in an accessible format. We've got to get to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, buddy, that will bring me to the end of the Horror Reporter. We just saved the Broadway industry and maybe stand-up comedy, you know. Just doing our part for 2020.
Dave Chappelle, you and I are friends. I know you're listening to this. All right. Get on the stand up thing, man. Make that happen.
Yeah. If you had, you know, kind of the Jay-Z Kanye stuff, if you could get Dave and a couple of the highest profile comedians to say, hey, we're launching this new venture, like Dre with Beats.
Yeah.
I think you'd probably have some buy-in. So anyway.
Also, Dry Bar Comedy, get at me. I've been wanting to go to Utah and record my show. So
for sure.
We should make that happen.
Word. All right, man. I'm going to call an end to the Horror Reporter there.
This has been this week's Horror Reporter.
All right. Well, that was how much time you got left, Jeff, before we got to get out of here? 10 minutes?
I can ride, man. I want to talk about this movie.
Yeah. So, let's pull the string, man. Let's get into this thing.
All right. Let's talk about 2020's Freaky from Christopher Lambert.
Yeah. Is it Lambert or Landon?
It's Lambert. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's not at all. It's Landon. And okay. I screwed that up. So I'm going to leave that in for everybody to enjoy.
That's all right. Hey, if you ever get to come to Missouri, there's a great restaurant called Lambert's that I think you would love. They throw rolls at you.
I've heard I was about to say, is this the place they throw rolls? I've heard of this. Yeah. I do need to come sample that out with you.
That's good stuff, man. Yeah, it's about 30 minutes away from where I live. So okay.
We want to call Mr. Wahlberg in.
Yeah. Wahlberg!
What? No!
Spoiler alert. All right, Derek, here's my opening salvo. I basically hated this movie up until the butcher attacked the main character, and then I loved this thing.
Yeah.
It was too obnoxious to start, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this again. I just can't. I can't do like juvenile boob jokes and, you know, teens liking to have sex and say bad words. I just don't have bandwidth for this week. And I persisted, and yet I persisted. And man, this was a really charming movie.
Yeah. So I'm the same way. I think that people are going to be two minds of that. So like if you're big into I thought it was cute in a screamish kind of way that they like satirized horror movies at the beginning, or almost like a Cabin in the Woods type of way where they like satirized it. But when Vince Vaughn sticks that champagne bottle down that kid's throat and it like we see everything, I was like, oh, this ain't Freaky or this ain't Happy Death Day. we're going all out on this.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's really about the right time where I was like, okay, I'll stay with this thing.
Yeah.
Because they did play with you in that, like the kid picks up some glass and sets it up and you're like, yeah, the guy's going to grab him. Nope. He picks up some glass and he sets it up on the top and the guy didn't grab him. Then the third time, it's go. That whole opening, like Murder in the Mansion set was full of a bunch of homages that I really did enjoy. Like that guy looks like he's wearing a Jason mask, the head tilt, that's the Michael Myers call out. I'm sure there's even more. I even love the detail of like this super rich mansion house has a hidden, room in the closet and the princess knows it. Like I liked every bit of that. But up until that point, I was like, gosh, I just can't do this. And honestly, even after that, like when it's like, oh, the mascots are the beavers. And, you know, we're going to talk about like a girl using a carrot in a particular way and it being high school drama. I was like, guys, we've done enough. Like, it's established, right? This is a raunch teen environment. That's fine.
Yeah.
I just don't need to keep walking this road with you.
I'm almost 40.
Well, I mean, honestly, you're going to come through the Skype screen right now and attack me. But early on when we're doing all the like, the jokes that aren't witty, they're just
crude.
They're just crude.
Yeah.
I honestly was like, I really appreciate, what was that movie? I just left my brain. Two young girls who are serial killers themselves and trying to capitalize.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Tragedy Girls, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
I was like, I really appreciate Tragedy Girls now. This movie is making me like Tragedy Girls even more. And I was a bigger fan than you were.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, just saying you were a fan, it makes you a bigger fan of it than I was. That movie could die in a fire.
I think it had quite a bit of merit. And there's sections of this movie that I, you know, a movie that I really liked that made me go like, man, Tragedy Girls did the teenage experience even better. That said, by the time we have Vince Vaughn playing a teenage girl, I couldn't be more in on this movie.
All in, yeah.
I've missed Vince Vaughn, dude. Where has he been?
Man, he has a wonderful turn in Fighting for My Family, the Paige story from the WWE. He's really, really good in that. And I was like, dang, this is the first good Vince Vaughn role I've seen in a long time. And now he comes back with this, man. So I hope that this is like a Vince Vaughnessance.
There you go. We brought Stephen King back to prominence. Surely we can pull this off.
It's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, he is by far and away the best part of this movie, especially when he's, you know, when he's playing the teenage girl. They give him so much fun stuff to do. And he's such a big hulking figure.
For
anyway,
sure.
Man, that like it just he just pulls it off with aplomb.
Yeah.
He does a great job.
I agree completely. Every time I watched him run with his wrists up in the air.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I was just delighted. I turned into the emoji with the heart eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. When he is like snuggling up to that high school crush in the back of the car. Because that's the thing about Vince Vaughn. He can actually act. He's kind of like John C. Reilly in that way. Like they are legitimately funny guys and they have great comedic timing. But they can act their pants off, too. And. Mm-hmm. This isn't prestige horror or whatever, but like Vince is great. Mm-hmm. And this is a wonderful vehicle. The fact that they landed him for this role, I think made the whole movie. Now, I thought Catherine Newton was awesome too. So mm-hmm. It's not like I'm saying she's not a shining star in this, but Vince Vaughn kind of makes the movie. And then, you know, Catherine doesn't have to carry the whole thing. And she can kind of be, you know, Robin to Batman. And man, mm-hmm. It worked.
Yeah. Well, but also in that same vein, like Catherine, for the bulk of this movie, isn't given a lot to work with. I mean, she's trying to play this Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees type of character that has a little more social skills, you know, and she's trying to navigate being in the body of this teenage girl. But there's not a lot of room for comedy. There's not a lot of room for really anything. It's all kind of one dimensional, and that's no fault of hers. That's just right. The way that character is. But she does such a great job. Like, I mean, there's legit times in this movie where you're like, I wouldn't cross her.
Sure.
Like, I wouldn't mess with that woman at all.
Sure.
So I don't want to take anything away from her, but just it's like Christopher Landon gave Vince Vaughn just enough. I don't know if it was enough freedom or if they had just a great, you know, working relationship or whatever. But I mean, he's just so good. And the way he plays off the two best friends, like it shouldn't be that good. But it is.
In full agreement. And then he'll just shift. And now I realize it's cuts and whatnot. But like he just shifts into this really poignant moment with the mom in the dressing room. You know, it's just. And but then right after that, he's running out in an Aaron Rodgers mask and he's tripping over everything. And so it's like old school Chevy Chase physical comedy. I loved everything about Vince Vaughn in this. And dude, Vince Vaughn plays a pretty good hulking monster to track down people and scare them.
Yeah. Yeah. He no offense, Vince Vaughn, but you're much better in this than you were in the remake of Psycho.
This is basically a Kane Hodder impersonation, and he pulls it off pretty well.
Yeah. You've learned a thing or two about being a big hulking monster since Psycho. I want to say that Vince Vaughn wasn't the first choice in this, but maybe I was wrong on that. I know that
fate served him.
Yeah, I know that Catherine Newton originally turned it down.
Really?
And after talking to Bloom about it, she was like, "All right, I'm in. Let's do this thing." I'm glad that she was. Obviously, I don't think we can get out of this thing without making some kind of comparisons to her and Tree from Happy Death Day.
Sure.
You and I both love Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. I felt like that this was a good continuation of that, and I hope that they live in the same universe so that we can eventually have those two do some kind of crossover.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about sort of the world that Christopher Landon has created here, and like the form that he's clearly onto something with here in a minute.
But the Landonverse?
Yeah, I mean, really, the Landonverse of remade comedy. So let's put a pin in that for just a second.
We'll hustle back. Yeah.
With Catherine Newton, you mentioned she just doesn't have a ton that demands much of her until we get to basically the old mill and she's got to start stalking people and whatnot. There's a reason that we basically have the character she's playing while she's possessed by the serial killer wearing a mask, because a flat effect and like a leering, forehead forward glare, you can only get so much mileage out of that. So we stick them in some kind of mask, but she got as much mileage out of it as possible. And she did a good job of playing on like the cute blonde teenage girl is now the biggest threat in any environment. I just thought it was really well done. And that made me think, I'm just going to track through her IMDb with you. This girl's got a rocket on her.
Yeah, she does.
So she went with competing with the Xbox motion capture technology for the best part of Paranormal Activity 4.
Mm-hmm.
You may not love this as much as I do, but she was in Lady Bird. Then she's in Three Billboards as Angela.
Fantastic movie.
For sure. Does a cup of coffee with Supernatural, drops in on Pokemon Detective Pikachu. And by the time we get to Freaky, I think we might have a new leading lady on our hands. She's 23. I think Hollywood has a problem of like processing women out too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's room for a new leading lady along the lines of Jessica Roth with Tree, like you've already said, I mean, I think Freaky is a pretty good resume, a pretty good CV for like, stick me in something that I have to carry. And I think, I think Miss Newton can handle it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we are really starting to see just how good she can be. And I think that this is the type of movie that is going to propel her to the next level. Again, I hate that this movie comes out at a time where we're in such a limbo state with movie theaters, because this would be a fun Friday night movie to go see with like a date or a bunch of friends. So I hate that part of it. But I am really glad that it's streaming now. You and I talked about when it first came out. Of course, it came out on Friday the 13th of last month. When it first came out, you and I were both like, oh, okay, we should go watch that in theaters. And I mean, every time I would go to my local theater, it looked like it was packed, and I just didn't want to take the risk of, getting the vid and then being out for 2 weeks at work or however long the situation would be. So my heart kind of did a flip this week when I saw that it was coming to streaming, and I immediately text you and I was like, hey, let's just lay out what we had originally planned to do. So we weren't obviously with you guys last week. We had planned to watch Black Christmas, since we're in the Christmas season now, plan to watch Black Christmas and review that. Here's my review for that. That movie is garbage and neither one of us could finish it. So don't even bother watching it. And if you have, God have mercy on your soul. I hope something comes back to you tenfold of a blessing, because you are a saint to be able to finish that thing.
Totally co-signed. So, listener, just to be clear, we have reviewed the original Black Christmas. It's available in your archives. We went to look at the 2019 remake, and that was a mistake.
Yeah.
So, remember, we covered Crow's Nest for our Patreon partners.
Watched it in full.
Yeah, watched every bit of it. And we know what it's like to take one on the chin and just watch a bad movie. Derek couldn't finish this movie, and I couldn't. I told Derek, I texted him, and I said, the horror uncle left my body. And slapped me and said, if you ever want to enjoy a horror movie again, you turn this off right now and pretend like it never existed.
Yeah.
So that's why we didn't have an episode last week. And when I came to Freaky, this is what I meant about like not having any bandwidth. When we were going through all the like tired teenage American Pie stuff, I was like, I just can't. I don't have any energy for this.
Yeah.
So when this movie shifts, I mean, it was like a sunbeam descending from the clouds.
Yeah. It's like a fresh painted coat.
Before we leave the acting tree, I don't think Mom had a whole lot to do in this movie. I don't think the sister had a whole lot to do. Celeste O'Connor was fine as Nyla, who's just basically the fifth wheel. You know, she's there to kind of be the third party in a three-party, a three-friend group. Misha Osherich, which I'm sure I didn't say that right, playing Josh, he's the guy who does the most outside of Vince and Catherine. And yet again, I think that guy has a lot of chops. Now, they gave him the worst stereotype, right? Like, he's just a superficial character in that way. But nonetheless, what he was told to do in acting in terms of portraying a range of emotions and all this stuff, I thought he really did it strongly, too. So I just want to throw a shout out to him for like, man, you did really well with kind of a tough assignment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you did get that last name right.
Okay. Well, good. Yeah. That's a rarity.
you were dang close, so I'm going to say it counts.
Okay. All right. Well, good job, Josh. And Misha, I'm not going to go any further than that, but well done.
Yeah, for sure, man. And again, I just want to pivot back to, I thought that Vince Vaughn had amazing chemistry with both those two people. You legit feel like he is this teenage girl who has been friends with these two guys or these two kids for years. And they just have a great... They just have a great back and forth. And I think as somebody who works with a lot of like 18 to 22 year olds, being an older person, I mean, I say older relatively, but, you know, being 35 and working with a bunch of 18 to 30 or 18 to 22 year olds, it's hard to have chemistry with kids, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just I mean, you're just on a different, it's just everything's different, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, man, just kudos to Vince for being, and to those two actors as well. I don't want to just say it's all on Vince Vaughn's shoulders, but kudos to the three of them for building a relationship that really did feel like that they had been friends for a long time.
I agree completely. And I don't know, I guess if I were a kid, now again, I'm 40, I'm not a kid, but I work with teenagers a lot. I think the teenagers I work with would enjoy hanging out with Vince Vaughn for a day.
Yeah.
So maybe that helps. Maybe it helps that they've got a decent hang buddy there who is enjoyable to be around, has some comedy chops, obviously has a sense of humor. You know, maybe that helps. I'm assuming when you have tried to do that, that's an asset, right? I mean, it's better than being a stick in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, so let's talk about the Landon formula here, because he's clearly hit something with finding, I mean, kind of tired or at least well-established comedy tropes and slapping, you know, an attractive blonde and a horror element into it. And then now you have a charming horror movie. I don't know how long the shelf life on this is, right? Like, it may be the development of like the Shyamalan thing where like for a little while, everybody's like super impressed by the twist. Then we all burn out on it, right? And I would totally see whatever Landon's genre is here. I totally see that like when somebody less skilled tries it, it's going to be worse.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, he's got a good thing going. And I think it's worth noting that basically this guy created a new, or if not created, perfected kind of a new version of the horror comedy that manages to be actually an actual horror movie, but quite funny. And so I just want to tip my cap to Christopher Landon on that.
Yeah. Do you feel like that we're already starting to get into the law of diminishing returns with these movies, or do you still feel like that there's some zip on them? Because go farther into this thing than normal, but like I do feel like I enjoyed Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You a little bit more than I enjoyed Freaky.
Oh, now that's a good question, because what I would say is that Happy Death Day to You was the third of these three movies.
Okay. I know. I could see that. I could be on board with that.
I could
be on board with that.
Yeah. I mean, I really think this movie does a better job of stepping around the problem with Happy Death Day to You, in that we got a magic knife and it does magic, is much more palatable in this setting than let's take you through a detailed scientific hypothesis and spend a ton of the movie inside the lab. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that was what I said the weakness of Death Day to You was back then. We don't need as much explanation. Just let it be magic.
Yeah.
And so for me, so I would have said this is the second of the Landon films behind Happy Death Day, the original.
I'll agree with you on that.
Okay. Well, I was thinking that if we're disagreed, then maybe that's the best proof that the law of diminishing returns is happening, because we're both going to say, like, each movie had its weaknesses. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For right now, I feel like it's a pretty vibrant stock and that we could probably get a little bit more mileage out of this. I'm not sure what the next version is. Like, I can't remember who those serial killers were, but O'Toole was one of them, and I think Henry Lucas was the other. Maybe we have Dumb and Dumber as a traveling serial killer squad, you know? So I don't know what the next step is, but I still feel like there is some room here for Landon to keep doing the thing that he's doing so well.
It's going to be old school.
Okay.
He's going to do...
That would work.
He's going to do a middle-aged man buys a frat house and turns it into fraternity, but then they all start to get killed.
I mean, like, who's the guy in Chicago who built the murder house, the actual serial killer? There was a guy back in the, like, 1900s who built a hotel that was just a death trap. It had, like, gas ovens.
Oh, yeah.
So we go with Herman, whatever his name was, and
Herman Cain.
No, I don't quite think that was it. But we have him build the murder hotel, and he brings in, I mean, that's basically what
H.H. Holmes.
That's basically what Holmes did. He would invite, you know, young women in, they'd disappear there, and he'd collect life insurance policies. So
yeah,
that's the next version.
Yeah. I kind of do want to see that movie now. with the girl from Sabrina playing the, H.H. Holmes character.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
Since it has to be an attractive young blonde as the main character.
I mean, that's kind of the formula, right? So the formula is take a comedic trope, take an attractive female lead, turn it into a horror movie somehow. And really, he doesn't do like ghost stuff. It's a slasher.
Mm-hmm.
And turn out your next. I mean, what do we want to call this? Landonite Project?
The Landonverse.
Yeah. Turn out your next, chapter of the Landonverse. And I'm okay with that, man. Like if we got an announcement that Freaky Again or whatever is coming out, like it'll bump up to like, okay, I'm excited for that. Where I maybe wouldn't have said that the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Right. Do you know this movie was originally called Freaky Friday the 13th?
I did. It looked like it went through several titles and got better each time. So like the first one was Killer Body.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, we need to take that one back to the drawing board. So, I mean, they managed to scale up to a pretty decent title, which is another turn. I was trying to think through this. This is clearly playing off Freaky Friday, right? I mean, I saw the Jamie Lee Curtis version.
Mm-hmm.
There's an older version of that it was a remake of that I've never seen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember a Rob Schneider movie called The Hot Chick?
Oh, yeah.
So that's in there too, right?
Yeah.
Is there any other movie like that that I'm not thinking of?
Oh, dang it. Yeah, there's got to be some more, man. I had a couple, too. And then when you asked me about it, I just lost them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that can be a project for our listeners in the Facebook group.
Yeah. Now it's going to bother me. Hang on.
Yeah. Take your time.
Well, I mean, you got The Change Up with Jason Bateman and Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Chances Are was an old Robert Downey Jr. movie.
Okay. I did not see that. I'm not sure if that offends you as a Robert Downey Jr. super fan, but I have not seen that one.
It doesn't, because it was like one of his older ones, like 88, maybe 89.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more of a reincarnation movie than it is like a body swap movie. Yeah, I think that was it. The biggest one I was thinking of was the Change Up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listener, if you know of more, throw them in the old Facebook group.
Yeah.
What about the kills in this one? Was there any kind of kill that stood out sort of
more? Man, I enjoyed it, this is the part where we realize that something's wrong with you and I, but I enjoyed all these kills a lot. I think my favorite, just because I was like, kill him, he gets what he deserves, was the shop teacher.
Me too, man. That's number one on my list.
Yeah.
And out of everything that Landon may be exaggerating with teenage culture, the desire to give the bully girl and the high school shop teacher what's coming is pretty much spot on. And so I'm not saying every kid wants to kill their least favorite teacher, you know, but like to just get the opportunity to reverse the power dynamics.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, this is where something's wrong with us, but there is something kind of satisfying with this guy who's not like, she's not being dramatic when she thinks he's a jerk. He's a straight up jerk.
Yeah.
And so when the serial killer's like, okay, guess who's getting their getting their comeuppance right now, right here, you're like, yeah, I'm okay with this.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't root for this, but I'm going to. Yeah. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And pushing him all the way through the saw blade, I was like, that's super gross. And I usually don't care for this, but that's pretty good.
Yeah. I wondered how you're going to handle it with the beginning two kills in this thing. Cause you know, the first one is the champagne or wine bottle. And then the next one, he just beats this chick to death with a toilet seat.
Yeah. Actually that one I didn't care for at all. And my wife was watching the movie with me for a little while and she's like, that's it. I'm out. I'm gone.
Yeah.
And I didn't blame her, you know? So yeah, I didn't care for that at all.
Yeah, and I almost texted you and was like, dude, this isn't free, or this isn't Happy Death Day. is they're hitting that R for sure.
Yeah, and I get it that like you've got to establish this guy's for real, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care for that.
But the cryo freeze.
Oh, and which, dude,
what freaking high school has a cryo chamber?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I thought. Like I get it, like for like athletics, we had an ice tub at White County High School back in the Paleozoic era. So maybe there is some kind of cryo thing if you've got an elite high school program.
Was that before Dr. King got shot?
Yeah, I'm sure it was. It was back when dinosaurs were on the earth, man. We used to hunt down pterodactyl hatchlings to feed ourselves with. But the imagery of that is so perfect.
Oh, it's great.
It's so perfect. It's this so fake plastic girl breaks into a million pieces. Like I just thought, okay, you're saying more than just this girl's dead. And
yeah,
I was quite impressed by it. And even the scene of like the guy who just runs up to, I think her name is Millie, and scares her, you know, Vince Vaughn coming out and making him pee himself. It made me realize, like, I thought I was flirting, but golly, guys can suck. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like, I was even really happy about that. Like, yeah, man, think about it. How's it feel?
Yeah, it almost makes you root for the serial killer a little bit, you know, in this thing, because like he through her body is able to get the comeuppance on these people that have been terrorizing her for so long. Man, high school sucked.
Well, you know, actually, I think I had a pretty good high school experience, but it maybe makes me think that maybe I'm the reason high school sucked for other people.
I enjoyed high school as well, but I just, looking back on it, I'm like, man, I used to wonder why people were the way they were. And now you go, oh, that's why, because people are douchebags.
Well, there's an old like punk rock song called High School Never Ends. And in honesty, high school never ends. Like you just keep running into those folks. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I do wish if I could do anything about this movie, I would have had them like shave Vince Vaughn's head, put him in a different outfit, something that would make you think that maybe people wouldn't immediately recognize him. Mm. And Millie could have used him a little bit longer to like fix some stuff about high school. You know what I mean? Maybe not kill every teacher, but like set some teachers straight.
Yeah.
You know, not kill every bully, but like set some bullies straight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's the director's cut.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of which, and this may be further into your notes, I don't know, but speaking of which, do you feel like that there are going to be some alternate endings to this thing, or were you satisfied with how it ended? Because for me, it felt very abrupt and just very like, that's the payoff we're going for with this thing. I don't know. It just felt like I feel like that there's more out there for it.
Well, I'm probably going to make some people mad with my answer to this. The movie has two endings, and the second ending felt tacked on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I get why they want to do it, because they want Millie to really have agency. They want her to really be the one who overcomes. And like, even this family that's fractured by the loss of the husband, they come back together to deal with this threat. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that additional ending just didn't improve the movie at all for me. And remember that film we watched not too long ago that was surprisingly good. It was Kevin James and the young lady from Ouija Part 2.
Yeah. Mary?
It was something about...
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Here, I'll look it up. You make your point and I'll yell out the name.
That movie does a good job of being like, if a kid has to become a violent killing machine, it's not going to go well for them psychologically. And so Millie having that moment of literally putting the stake through Dracula's heart, I get why that's supposed to be empowering and whatnot. I'm not criticizing the choice to like empower the scream queen, empower mm-hmm. the final girl.
Mm-hmm.
But it being so obviously tacked on and them kind of like, she's going to go through an awakening through this. Well, now she's basically done what Vince Vaughn's character told her to do when she came running at him to stab her. Like, he's telling her, go ahead, come on, become a killer, right? Mm-hmm. It's the Emperor's temptation to Luke when it comes to Vader and himself. Like, grab your lightsaber and strike him down. And so, like, just tacking it on there at the end, I thought, guys, just quit. Quit at the last kiss there at the ambulance and run to mm-hmm. mom, and the drone shot flies away. Mm-hmm. I know that's kind of more stock in trade, mm-hmm. but really, after the Halloween reboots, the empowered victim thing is kind of tired, too. Or at least it's not revolutionary. I guess I should say it that way. It's not revolutionary. So let's just leave on the classic teenage, you know, the John Hughes ending. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with that. Becky was the name of that movie, Becky, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Good movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic movie. One of the better ones we've seen this year.
Yep.
Sometimes that's not saying a lot, though. I completely agree with you. I felt like that it was kind of tacked on. And for me, it was just kind of anticlimactic. Mm-hmm. Like, I much rather would have had the 90s teen horror ending where, you know, the guy and the girl are okay. They're kissing at the back of the ambulance and we fade to black. Even you could have kept Vince Vaughn's character alive for a sequel.
I thought the exact same thing. Like, when we see the ambulance driving through the shadows and they're working on him, I thought, oh, great. They're going to say, like Michael Myers and everybody else, the butcher survived. Great.
Yeah.
But then they take him and give him, like, literally his sternum is destroyed. So,
yeah.
I mean, I guess in movie magic, you could bring him back. But I just thought that was a waste. I just thought it was extraneous.
Yeah.
Was there anything they would do as an alternate?
Man, I don't know. I mean, the biggest thing I could think of is to keep him alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe if they do a sequel, though, you can use that knife to bring him back to life as somebody else. And he's got 24 hours to stay in that body. You know, he's got to do some kind of ritual to stay in the, you know, something. I don't know.
No, I mean, these movies are not trying to, like, be plot driven, right?
Yeah.
So, like, him waking up in the ambulance, taking it over, driving back to the police station and getting the knife. And then somehow we see him see Josh's crappy car. Mm-hmm. And so that, like, the next one is Josh dealing with it. And Millie's got to, like, be the outsider coaching Josh through it.
Yeah.
Dude, right now I'll pay $20 to watch that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, it, I mean, there's a few criticisms. I thought the attempt to be raunchy was really simplistic and tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the extra ending was tacked on and kind of a wasted opportunity. But otherwise, I was really happy with this movie. I don't mean to major on my criticisms.
Yeah, no, man, I agree. I mean, that's what we do this thing for, right? Like, we have to take the good with the bad. And there was this isn't a perfect movie. And I think that both of your criticisms are justified. I think that if anyone would look at this thing with a critical eye, they would think the same thing. I think that sometimes sometimes the script was a little too simplistic. It kind of makes you feel like the writer thought you were an idiot, you know, in this thing, like, a couple times, not just with sophomoric humor, but also, like, at the beginning when the mom's talking to the daughter or talking to Millie and she's like, you know, I know things haven't been the same since your father. And I'm like, yeah, we get it. He's dead. Like, I understand. You don't have to run me over with a truck over it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So stuff like that. I think that there's certain situations that this thing wasn't the best, but dude, overall, I'm down.
Yeah.
And if we do get a sequel where he's inhabiting Josh's body or, like, the sister's body or something, and now Millie's got to be the guru to, you know, to lead the charge and get them back together or whatever. Yeah, man, I'm in. I'm all the way in. Mm-hmm. Let's make that happen. Matter of fact, if he wants to be Booker, like, if he stabs Booker just so he can be closer to Millie, so he can, you know, try to exact revenge. Like, I'm down for that too. Let's put that in development right now and make it happen.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, I don't think that I can necessarily write the screenplay or the script. Like, I think there's storytelling skills I don't have. But one of these days, I would just like to see a movie like this where someone like me comes in to say, oh, it's a spontaneous teenage party at an abandoned property. It can't have the greatest sound system and light array and decorations. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Again, I'm old, but I threw spontaneous parties, and it was really hard to scrounge even a decent, you know, setup together.
Yeah.
Plus the old meal, we already know, not only does a serial killer live there, but like a drug addict guy is there. But, you know, all these kids are out just jamming, and I guess the junkie guy is just like, nah, it's cool. I'll just take a beat. I'll just set this one out. You know what I mean?
You guys got any snow?
So anyway, a few tweaks here and there, and I think the movie could be even better. But in the dry gulch we've been walking in, this was a sweet oasis of cool, refreshing water.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the end of the year is coming up pretty soon, and I don't know how we're going to do our year-end review, because this, I mean, this has been the craziest year for everybody, but
we can make it a year-end celebration.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that if, you know, if we do our regular like top 10 list, I think this thing goes on it for me, man.
Sure.
I think this was a really fun, it was a really fun movie. It gave me the same kind of Happy Death Day vibes. And I look forward to seeing what comes next from not only from this, you know, if they do a sequel, but also just from Christopher Landon, Vince Vaughn, and Catherine Newton. Right? Yep. Was that her name?
Yeah. Me too. And on that front, so obviously, you know, Landon worked on Paranormal Activity. He had some definite misses. But he also had this 2015 movie that I think you and I have talked about but never watched, called Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
Okay.
And it's teenagers dealing with a zombie outbreak.
Okay.
And it's got to be sort of him workshopping this concept of teenagers in a comedic situation, but it turns out to be a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Ty Sheridan's in it, Logan Miller. You know, there's a few like lower level stars in it. Would you be up for reviewing that for next week?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
That sounds great.
All right. Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse from 2015. It's hour 33. Sounds right up our alley.
Yeah, I'm down.
Well, man, that's about all I got to say about Freaky.
All right, dude. Well, hey, let's throw it out there, man. Did we see something scary, number one?
That's a tough question. I don't think I was ever scared in this movie. Yeah. I think people who aren't you and me would say, hey, this is a scary movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But even in a way that I like the movie doesn't rely on jump scares a lot.
Right.
I mean, it kind of does its horror with visual and with menace.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say that I saw something scary. I saw something enjoyable, but not scary.
I'm going to horror uncle the heck out of this thing, though, man. I saw something scary.
Okay.
I think that if you take away the normalcy of you and I watching these kinds of movies every week, I think you're going to see some scary stuff. I think that the shop teacher being cut in half was pretty scary on a gore kind of level. I think that there's several times in this thing where Vince Vaughn just is the hulking, like head tilted
blank
serial killer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could get you if you're not a horror connoisseur like you and I are.
Sure.
So,
sure.
While I also saw something enjoyable, I think I saw something scary.
Okay.
I'm glad to
have this movie praised in that way. So, I mean, it's a good movie. And if you can say something scary, one more power to you.
Yeah. I'm going to give it its props on that. On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put this?
See, here again, I just don't know how to be objective because everything we've watched for a while now has been pretty terrible.
Yeah. Hot garbage.
And so I think my compass is like, not my compass, I guess my thermometer is screwed up. But dude, for me, this is a 7. I mean, I'll probably watch this again. And I can't remember the last movie I've seen that I'll watch again. In fact, I told my wife this weekend, like, I can't remember the last time I turned something on and was truly entertained. And so I was entertained in this, and it could be context, but I really enjoyed it. So I'm going to give it a 7.
Yeah, I guess it's weird that I was the horror uncle in this, but I'm going to actually rank it lower. I was going to go 6.5, but I don't think you're wrong in saying 7. I just think that we may have ranked Happy Death Day at like an 8, and I don't think this is Happy Death Day.
Agreed.
And so that's another reason why I wanted to bump it down a little bit lower. It's good. It's real good. And I think it's above perfectly acceptable horror. But I also don't want to like put it at a ranking that's similar or close to Happy Death Day when I didn't enjoy it as much as I enjoyed Happy Death Day. But yeah, 6.5, 7. Yeah, 6.5, 7. I think that's the right place to put it. Skip it or stream it, Jeff. What do you think?
Oh, I'd stream it. This is the first, like, Antebellum. I'm trying to think of the movies that have come, like, hey, pay us a ton of money to watch this movie. This is the first one I would have been happy to have paid to watch at full price.
Man, Antebellum. Sorry, I got PTSD. Yeah, man, just garbage all around. But yeah, for sure. This is a movie that I was happy to shell out $20 for. Honest to goodness, if it goes on sale on like a stream, you know, like Vudu or something like that, I'll probably pick it up. Mm. I think this is one that would go into my rotation of like, hey, I haven't watched a fun movie in a while. I'm going to put on Freaky.
Yeah.
Yep. And honestly, I don't think you can get much better kind of compliment or praise for a movie like this than that.
Sure.
You know, it's got a good rewatchability factor on it. So, yeah, I'm glad we pivoted, man. I'm glad we I hate that we missed a week, but I'm glad that we took the time to review something good instead of just trying to review something for the sake of reviewing something.
And we managed to save Broadway and maybe stand-up comedy. So,
yeah, I mean, really, this was a jam-packed episode of Saw Something Scary for sure.
Productive, definitely productive.
Yeah, yeah. I won't listen to an hour and a half of Gary Vee podcast before we record the next one. So I'm not like, you know what? I'm going to buy the Jets. Yeah. So anyway, let's do some housekeeping. We'll get out of here. Let us know what you thought about this movie. Let us know what you thought about this episode. Go to We Saw Something Scary on Facebook. Join that group and become part of the revolution. We have a good time over there. I think, are they still doing trivia on Saturday nights? Do you know?
I'm actually not sure.
Yeah, dude, I'm so busy nowadays. I barely get to do anything with it. I know that they were doing trivia. So if you're a fan, if they're not now, maybe you can get them back into doing it. But again, it's We Saw Something Scary on Facebook. We would love for you to rate and review, subscribe to this podcast. Apple Podcasts is the best place to do that. Give us those 5-star reviews so that more people can learn more about Saw Something Scary. We greatly appreciate that. And then we've mentioned it before already in this show, but if you want to hear me and Jeff dunk on some crappy movies, go to patreon.com/scarypodcast. And you can, I think for as little as $3 a month, you can get those bonus episodes and hear the stank that we were talking about earlier. That will never grace this main feed because I don't want to put that kind of negativity out for the masses. That's just for the family. So enjoy it. And as always, we thank those of you who are our patrons. You guys are the life force of this podcast. We couldn't do it without you.
Absolutely.
He's at Right Jeff. I'm at Derek Zoo. We're out of time. Next week, we're going to talk to some Girl Scouts or something. I'm not real sure what the name of that movie was, but we'll do some more Christopher Landon, and I'm excited about that. And yeah, we'll be back with a brand new edition. Till then, you guys have a great week. Stay away from clowns and sewers, blind men with turkey basters, and white people with teacups. We'll see you back here real soon. Bye-bye, man.